You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. My name is Evan Sutter. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. We both write for Bright Side of the Sun over on SB Nation. We're joining you the day after the Suns actually lost once again their 27th or last 29th game against the Boston Celtics. But this time it wasn't double digits without Kyrie Irving. It was 102-94. The Suns lost. Josh Jackson had a strong performance alongside Jason Tatum, the other rookie the Celtics had. 23.6 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals on 9 of 15 field goals. Tyler Ulis possibly had his best game of the season with 19 points, 5 rebounds, and 8 assists on 6 of 12 field goals. And Marquese Chris, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 block on 6 of 8 field goals. So I think those three were the big standouts for me. And I wrote a story today from my sidebar from last night's game about Josh Jackson, just how impressive coming away with how he's transitioning into the number one role pretty smoothly so far. So what's your main takeaway? Because for me, I think it's just the continued acceleration of Josh Jackson's development.
Yeah, you and I were both at this game last night, and it was – I mean, actually think to me one of the bigger stories was – I mean, I guess not during the game, but – I was really expecting more people in the locker room to go talk to Marquese Chris, just because I think it was another example from him last night of taking advantage of an opportunity these last few games. And then, of course, I mean, the really big story last night was Alan Williams making his season debut, returning from an injury, and played 16 minutes. Only 1 of 4 shooting, but I think the energy... It was impressive to me to see him come back and play with that much energy, that much kind of tangible emotion right away, and have an impact like that just after not playing basketball for almost a year. It's kind of incredible to say that, but that was, I mean, I think the really big, like, big picture story. But then Chris, too, I think another game for him that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, you spoke on Alan Williams there a little bit. It was his season debut last night. I think he only played about, I believe, 4 or 5 minutes. So, but the thing with him last night was he looked good alongside the likes of Dragan Bender and Josh Jackson. The Suns were down by 20 points last night to those Celtics, and Alan Williams, I think, was one of the main reasons why, even though he didn't play much of that spurt, that his energy, I think, sparked that young group of there that the Suns had possessed there. So what's your thoughts on just Alan Williams and his presence there last night? Because I think without him, I think the Suns would have just crawled back into a 30-point deficit instead.
Yeah, he played 16 minutes last night, so a pretty decent chunk for him. And I'm always surprised watching him play how much he's able to impact the game on the defensive end of the floor. There was one situation, I think it was late in the third quarter or so, got switched on to Jason Tatum at the top of the key. And I mean, you see some bigs just get terrified of the situations. They get put on skates and kind of just tumble over or like shimmy out of the way to let the guy get to the rim. And Williams was clapping in Tatum's face, kind of, I mean, ended up allowing a pretty easy shot at the rim anyway. But it's plays like that where you just really feel his impact. And I think, you know, the guys that we did talk to in the locker room last night, from Ulis to Jackson, everyone was kind of harping on how much fun it is and how much of an impact it makes just having a guy like that on the court who brings it regardless of the situation.
How do you see Williams' minutes shaking out over the last 7 or so games? Because I imagine his minutes will only go up, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you saw Alex Len already down to 14 last night, and he played well. I thought 5 offensive rebounds that I didn't even notice in the game. 5 is a pretty solid number, only 14 minutes for him. So if he's playing that well and only getting 14 to make room for Williams coming back, I think you're going to continue to see that. And one of the other guys I think we should hit on is Dragan Bender, who double-digit rebounding game was kind of surprising from him last night, but I would not be surprised if his minutes go down at least a little bit if Williams continues to show that two-way energy compared to Bender, who doesn't always do that.
Yeah, speaking of Dragan Bender, I'm glad you brought him up, because Jay Trout, I asked him last night before the game about his just passiveness over the last week or so, especially with Booker and Warren now out. And he mentioned after the Cleveland game, he talked to Bender about being more aggressive. And that's kind of ironic, because the next game against Orlando, he came with a dud. He barely shot the ball. And then once again tonight, he didn't really shoot the ball at all until late in the game when it was out of hand. He made 1 3-pointer about 2 minutes left in the game. So Just what's your thoughts on Dragan Bender? Because I know I pointed out to you last night, he just seems just excited about making the pass more instead of the shot, because he like was celebrating more passing-wise, just looking more at his body language, more specifically last night. And he was, like, right from knocking over Terry Rozier, he went over and tried to help him up immediately. I just don't – it just seems like that passiveness is in his nature, and I don't know if you can just get that all of a sudden just to flip by next season.
No, I don't think you necessarily can. He's somebody who, you know, Tyler Ulis was talking last night about, and Triano pointed this out too, that health is a pretty big thing for Ulis specifically. And so, you know, you're going into the summer, you're kind of starting to, we were starting to hear from some of these guys, like what their priorities are going into the summer and over these last few games, what they feel like they need to get right. We didn't talk to Bender, but he stands out to me as somebody who isn't going to actually get too much out of, you know, putting shots up or the athleticism stuff. Some of the, you know, putting on muscle, being able to get into the gym, I think will help him a lot. But as far as that consistency and confidence, I don't think, you know, being alone in the gym is really the right thing for him. And that does kind of make these last few games a little bit more important for him. I mean, it's not just a mindset thing, too. I was saying to you last night, like, the driving isn't, it's easy to say he should do it more. Last night he probably maybe had, what, three or four possessions where he went to the rim, and he doesn't have lateral explosiveness, so he's able to put the ball on the floor because he has, like, a decent feel and handle for somebody as tall as he is, especially compared to the matchups he's going up against. He's able to, you know, kind of get past the bigger guys, but he can't turn the corner on them. So you see him, he's putting his left elbow out, driving right pretty often to try to create spacing. Doesn't really foul, but, you know, he's using that arm, and then he just doesn't get around the defender, and so he gets to, you know, gets to the rim, sure, but by the time he's there, he's hoisting a shot over contesting defense, and it usually will hit the corner of the box and then the side of the rim and bounce away. So it's easier said than done for, oh, he should be driving more. Well, you know, even when he does it, the results are not pretty at this point.
For sure, and I think to, I guess, pivot over to Dragan Bender a little bit more, I wanted to ask you about, since you mentioned, like, maybe being in an open gym will work out for him, maybe, like, once you, if you were in his position, hit up a guy like Dario Saric, like, and also a Croatian guy, and it seems like being around a guy like Dario Saric would really help him out, because he's actually aggressive on offense compared to Dragan.
Yeah, I mean, you see those guys, I just think the thing that stands out, and maybe, you know, to go back kind of, I guess, on what I'm saying, one thing that could help them is that time in the gym. So Saric is, I think, partially effective because he's just a monster. Like, he's down there at the elbow, in the paint, doing a lot of the same, or I guess getting the ball in a lot of the same situations Bender is, but he's able to create space and open space for himself way more easily because he has that strength and that motor that we don't always see from Bender.
For sure, and I guess real quick, I wanted to jump over to his other draft mate, and that was Marquise Chris. This is his third straight game, I think, where he's had at least a solid performance. So what was your thoughts last night on Marquise Chris putting together, once again, a 13-point, 4-rebound, 2 assists, and I also 1 block in about, I believe, 22 or 23 minutes, something like that?
He was, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block, 1 of 3 from three as well. I think the thing I've been noticing from him, and I would like to hear if you agree, is kind of just like, I mean, at least over these past four especially, but really, you know, maybe a week or two, three in a row now, where he's just played consistently. Like, I feel like the beginning of the year was kind of symbolized by Chris's high peaks and low valleys, and it would just be game to game, like, what is going to happen with this guy? What are we going to have to talk about next? Is it going to be a tantrum? Is it going to be the, you know, this crazy game where we all get excited? And it's kind of just been a pretty normalized, consistent progress for him for maybe the last month or so, and that's good to see too. And that's its own kind of step forward, where, you know, it's really awesome when these guys show this incredible skill maybe we haven't seen, or have a hot shooting night where you're like, oh wow, I didn't know he's capable of that. But in a way, it's like these routine 13 and fives with you know, some solid defensive play is pretty out of the ordinary in its own way for somebody like Chris.
For sure. And I think to speak more on the point of Chris or Bender, I guess these continued performances from Chris, did they kind of sway you more toward his direction as of late, as far as keeping him over Dragan, or Or are you still kind of at a mute point on that, where you're kind of more in favor of just blowing it all up?
Yeah, I don't mean one game doesn't change it, but I think that's maybe where I'm coming from with those, you know, several weeks now of Chris. I don't know. It's just like maybe you go back and forth with the top of the draft this year. I think it's similar kind of as far as how close it is with these two guys. And I do not envy the guys in this front office who have to make that decision, because you were talking last night about, and we've talked about it on the pod, I think once or twice as well, like, you know, the idea that this could be somewhat of a rookie wall for Dragan Bender, despite it being his second season, just because of the weird minutes situation he had in his rookie season and not really playing much at all until the very end. And that makes a good deal of sense to me as far as the rhythm of a career goes, but it's not a great time to have it if you're facing a decision like that potentially, and the Suns clearly are with how much front court talent they could add this summer.
For sure, and I think to add on to that point there, it's crazy to say, but they're probably going to have to make a decision in about 2 months or so with the draft close to kind of in draft workouts, so it'll be really interesting. I imagine a veteran forward like a Derek Favors type of guy will make a lot of sense for them this summer as far as free agency goes, but to move over here to the point guard situation in the Phoenix Suns, I think last night was kind of a cementing point for how bad it's gone for Alfred Payne as of late and how good it's gone for Tyler Ulis, because it seems at this point, I even tweeted last night, Tyler Ulis should honestly be starting the last 7 games. Don't you agree?
If he plays like he did last night, it's really hard to make an argument against that, for sure.
And then I guess to add on there with Ulis, he had 19 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists on 6 12 field goals, and he just looked very bouncy last night. I don't know if it... Do you think it's more of the injury thing with Ulis? Was he really that nagged all season long with that just injury in his hip, you think? Because I feel like if we would have saw these consistent performances from even without Alan Williams out there, these should have been happening more consistently.
Yeah, it's tough to explain. I mean, I guess in this case I would default to what they're saying, which, you know, asked separately about what the difference has been tonight and over the last few games for Ulis. He and Triano both pointed to that back injury he was missing games and time with early in the season, and it doesn't make sense necessarily, because I guess simply just because, you know, Ulis hasn't been complaining about it, or I guess hasn't been like on the injury report game to game, like, you know, for instance, Williams has, or Davon Reed even, that maybe it doesn't occur to us that way, but he's obviously been out of sorts, and it's not just a matter of losing skill. Like, you know, last night he didn't just become a better player all over again. Like, we saw that, like you're saying, the bounciness. And one thing that stuck out to me was especially in that second quarter and third quarter, the handle was just back out of nowhere. He's that in and out crossover he has coming off screens, and especially that chemistry he has with Williams. He'll, you know, lower his shoulder and just turn the corner right around a tight screen from Williams, and then zoom, you know, back zip across the lane again, right in front of Williams, and he knows it's coming, and then the defense has to adjust kind of on the fly to that weird pattern of his, and all that stuff that made him difficult to guard for defenses last year was back. And, you know, the problems are still there. They're always going to be with his height and efficiency on offense, but you're right, this was like a massive step from what we saw last year.
Yeah, I think from what we were expecting this entire season, him to take a little bit of a jump from that end of the season, this is what we were expecting this entire season. So to see Ulis put up this type of numbers last night, we're pretty impressed to see. And on the opposite spectrum, it's Elfrid Payton for me, who I continues to think, honestly, I think he's kind of quit on the team. It seems like he's just not really putting in much of an effort on either end. Jay Triano barely played him at all in this game. He had like an 8-minute period in the third where he played, and after that, he didn't see the last at all in the entire fourth quarter. I don't think he played all in the entire second quarter, too. So do you think that Elfrid Payton's getting tired of Phoenix and Jay Triano's getting tired of Elfrid Payton?
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually like to hear. I mean, you're around the team. Like, you go to more practices, more games than me. I mean, I was surprised. I kind of was watching Payton after the game to kind of see, like, what do you do after a performance like this? And I mean, I don't think you can overstate how miserable of a game it was. Not only, okay, 15 minutes looks really bad on paper, but there's a variety of reasons someone could get benched for the second and fourth quarters. Like, you could be really cold, you could be jacking up bad shots, foul trouble, there's a whole bunch of different stuff, and it's hard to make an argument for anything but his like lack of focus and attention and hustle or whatever you want to call it, like, you know, quitting on the team's an easy, succinct way to say it. He took one shot. That's pretty incredible. Like, have you heard anything from them, from Triano, or no games I've talked to has the media huddle really talked to Peyton at all, but maybe that's happened before. Like, what's been your read kind of the progress of where he started to how did we get here?
Honestly, yeah, I feel like just the hot start was Peyton just going by himself with not within the flow of the offense, quote unquote, because he didn't know the plays, so he was doing what he knew. And I guess once he kind of got into the system more and more, and then it was, I know Triano's system is more about defense, even though it's not really about that, really, with how the numbers show, but he's not a good defender. He quickly lost his minutes to Shaquille Harrison. And I even talked to Triano about Peyton a couple weeks ago, and he just mentioned that, like he told you last time when you asked the question about why his minutes are dwindling, he just mentioned that the effort, that it's not there. So and also the body language, too, with Peyton. I don't know if you noticed that last night. Just every time he made a mistake, much like Dragan Bender, he just would put his head down, just trap down the other way. So I think, honestly, with Peyton, it's just, I don't know how to other way to explain it other than just saying that it just seems like he's not interested in being here anymore, because even the locker room last night, he just, once he got out, he just put his head in his towel and didn't really talk to anyone. And it just seems like he doesn't want to be here anymore. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, it was, like I said, after the game, like, he kind of just got dressed quickly and left, and he was gone before I even noticed. I saw him when we walked in, and then by the time I kind of picked my head up again after we went and talked to Ulis, he was already gone. And you know, it's tough when you're 3 months, 4 months from free agency, whatever he was when he got traded, to have to integrate yourself into a team, especially one that, you know, kind of surprisingly, there was a lot of pressure on Peyton to come in and make this team better, which is not common for somebody who, you know, he's not an all-star. Like, kind of odd that there was so much pressure on him, and then he had that early, after the trade deadline, kind of burst. So yeah, it's not necessarily the best situation for him, but kind of a quick decline there, and that's just disappointing. But you know, you move on, and like, you know, the thing was with the trade when it happened, and it's still true today, they basically got him for free. They used the second round pick that they got for taking on Troy Daniels is the thing to remember there. I mean, there really was no risk, and you know, they were able to move on from him. There's obviously no mandate. Triano repeated that again last night. There's no mandate that he's getting on, you know, who's getting which minutes, especially with so many injuries. He really is forced to just play whoever is performing well. So Peyton's just clearly not earning the minutes, and now he's not playing, and I guess, you know, move on and renounce him in free agency, and there you go.
Yeah, I imagine his minutes will continue to dwindle over those last seven or so games, because, like you mentioned there, just the effort's not there anymore with Peyton. So, and you quickly mentioned it there at the end there. Do you have the honest feeling that they're going to rescind his rights instead of just keeping him as a restricted free agent to see if anyone offers him anything?
Because it's very difficult for me to imagine a situation in which they want him back. And at that point, sure, they're not a team that's going to be aggressive spending, so it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if they were to extend the qualifying offer to him and wait it out. They're not like needing to keep a max space open for, you know, whatever huge free agent, and we don't expect the summer to play out that way. So maybe they do it just to kind of have that backup plan. But I mean, why would it's not, has nothing to do with talent. It's what this conversation we're having is relationships are gotten bad in, you know, 15-20 games. I have no reason to think it would improve next year, so you just kind of move on in my mind.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess to wrap up the podcast, we were going to end it on with the, we had a quick discussion last night about it, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it a day later, and that's about the, I imagine, the upcoming roster rehaul, especially at the bottom half of the roster, and especially the young guys who are going to stay around for the 2018-2019 version of the Phoenix Suns. And I guess I'll start here with my answers. And I think I'm quickly coming away with about six or seven guys who I think are going to stay. I think the rest are on the Mendoza line, quote-unquote. But I think the two guys are untouchable. Obviously, Devin Booker, he'll get his max contract on July 1st for $152 million. Josh Jackson's going to be untouchable, I believe. And after that, I think surprisingly, I'm going to put Brandon Knight as third, because I think McDonough's fully in on him just to see what he has, and if he can build up any value. So I think he's number three. Alan Williams is number four because I just think he's going to be a really good backup role man, and he's pretty cheap, so he's number four. Davon Reed, number five, and then Tyler Ulis, number six, and then I think one of Marquise Christian Dragan Bender's number seven. So I think I have seven guys who are guaranteed on the roster next season, but that leaves at least six to eight more open roster spots up for really an entire rehaul.
So you don't – I mean, did you miss Warren, or did you intentionally leave him off?
I intentionally left him off because I'm just, like, up in the air because I feel like I don't know how to rate him. I think McDonough values him, but I feel like he could be a guy that's moved on draft night. I think, he's the guy, if they want to get some sort of value this summer and get, like, something back for a guy like TJ Warren, I think he's just the most movable asset to improve this team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if you're looking at one of those, you know, trades for some sort of star player, he makes a lot of sense just because he now have that big price tag, so a contract that makes more great work is one of the other things with him. And I think you're right. I think, you know, Troy Daniels is going to be easily movable with how cheap he also is and the success he's had this year. He's a pretty simple plug-and-play option for a lot of contending teams in my mind. And then Jared Dudley, similar. We were talking last night. I mean, Tyson Chandler and Jared Dudley are both going to be on their last year of their deal, so they become pretty easy to cut using the stretch provision if need be, where Jared Dudley would then cost about $3 million over the season off the roster. That is a lot more affordable than previously. And yeah, I mean, then the rest of it's kind of just guys, and those are, you know, nobody's really shown themselves to be like Shaq Harrison. Maybe he's on the team, maybe he's not. I don't think it's moving the needle. So it's going to be pretty crazy to see where this roster stands in, like, September 1st of 2018.
I guess this is hard to say because it's going to be impossible with how active I imagine the Suns will be this summer. But Dane, there's some sort of avenue that they're going to target more as far as free agency draft or trades. I think there's like some area that they're going to really focus in on, like maybe like controlling the draft.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they're in a position to really have a in the driver's seat for the majority of the summer with as far as kind of the cluster of young teams that they belong to, like the changing rebuilding teams. They have the most cap space of all those teams and the most draft picks, I guess, in that kind of falls in that category as well. They have three first rounders and I think a few second rounders too. So they really are just going to be able to pick and choose where they spend their assets and kind of see how it goes from there. I mean, they kind of have some talent in every position, and though there's obviously the point guard and big man positions are the base needs, I think that they can be a little more creative because, like we just went through, there's some guys at every position that we expect to be in this next year who are playing well right now, have made some progress this year. So we don't know who it'll be, but they have that flexibility, and so they're able to kind of add talent more creatively rather than make moves like we've, you know, been praying they avoid over the last 2 years.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I imagine, I think we should cover this before the podcast ends as well, because when we saw this last time, we both looked at each other and thought this was a pretty big moment for the Suns this season with how bad it's been. But the Memphis Grizzlies actually upset the Minnesota Timberwolves last night in Minnesota, I believe. So that's a pretty surprising loss for them. And that really puts the Phoenix Suns in the driver's seat to end the season with the most ping pong balls on lottery night, because they now have a game and a half lead on Memphis and at least a 2 to 2.5 game lead on everyone else in the top 6-7 all clustered up there. So I guess I want to get your thoughts last down that win by Memphis and how important that's going to be for the Suns, because I think right now I don't think the Suns could be fair at all the rest of the season in any of their games, and especially if Booker and Warren don't play. So doing this now puts the Suns in a really, really good spot as far as trying to get the number one pick.
Yeah, they have two more losses now than Memphis. They've played one less game, if I'm looking at that right. Yeah, so I think it's pretty difficult to imagine a situation where the Grizzlies take over that one spot. And the really big thing, especially this year, being the last year of the current lottery structure, is if the Suns can hold that spot, the big unachievable thing that they have not been able to get this whole rebuild, the top three pick will be a promise. It will happen if they get that top lottery spot. And that's pretty incredible that it's broken down that way the past three seasons. But finally, I think it will. And so the draft becomes a lot more fixed at that point. You don't have to worry about some massive crazy drop anymore, and you can start honing in on those top three talents and see who you like the best and plan the rest of the summer, kind of like we're talking about. So that's just a really big step. Grizzlies have now won two games in the past like 2 weeks out of nowhere and kind of fumbled away that top spot.
For sure. I imagine with Devin Booker, he came out yesterday during shoot around and said his hand's still bothering him while he's trying to shoot around. So I imagine he probably won't play the rest of the season if he doesn't play at all this week. So that's something the modern moving forward. But I guess from a final take on that draft, I wanted to ask you about, Bren, this is a doomsday scenario, I imagine, for the Suns, even though I really am in favor of Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton at the top. There's easily, I think we can both agree, there's two prospects at the top. So let's say doomsday scenario, the Suns end up at number three overall, even though they have the most ping pong balls. At that situation, I think that's where it gets really interesting, because I don't know if the Suns have a clear consensus number three guy on their board between Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson, Michael Porter, Mohamed Bamba. So I guess we can play a quick scenario here. If they end up at 3-8 and then Doncic is off the board, I think that gets a little weird for the Suns there.
Yes, I think that that's a frustrating situation for them. Just, of course, you know, it would be pretty typical Suns tanking to have the top spot guaranteed a number three in a two-man draft and then have to pick between like a three or four player tier three. I mean, who knows? Maybe their board is more spread out than that and they have a surefire number three guy. Jaren Jackson sure looks like that. To me, but they have those two front court players, so it is a little tougher there. And I think, I mean, I kind of like Michael Porter at that spot for them. I don't like Marvin Bagley there. There are a lot of options, but you know, I think there is like a pretty firm top eight or nine here. So landing at three shouldn't scare people away too much, but it would be a pretty big step down from the top two.
For sure, yeah. I think for me, I'm in the same boat as you with Michael Porter Jr. and Jaren Jackson Jr. at that 1A, 1B option, number three. But to wrap this thing up, I wanted to ask you one final thought on if the Suns land at number one, which could obviously happen with a 25% chance of getting number one at the moment. If they landed at number one, I imagine the debate between Ayton and Doncic, I kind of hinted at this a few months ago, it's going to be pretty crazy, I imagine, in the Phoenix market with how people are going to pick between Team Doncic and Team Ayton. So what side are you going to currently lie on? And if the ping pong balls do fall away in May, how's that going to react to the Suns fans?
Yeah, I think it should be Doncic. I think you see in a night like last night, to kind of tie it all up there, like even without Devin Booker, without TJ Warren, having this that creation, whatever it is that Tyler Ulis does bring, it's not at the level of Luka Doncic or Devin Booker or where we project Josh Jackson to be, but even just that little bit was able to keep them competitive in a game where the Celtics were without their star and missed some shots in the second half. You just see how big of a difference that makes for this team and how much they miss it when it's not there. And to me, it's with how glaring that is, that's become to me more glaring than the need for a rim protector or an interior scorer. So as far as like player archetypes, skill sets go, I think you have to favor Doncic at this point.
Definitely. I'm in the same boat as you there as well. I think Luka Doncic is far and away number one prospect. But as Ryan McDonough mentioned on 98.7, I think last month, a big man would be more priority right now. So like, I think that's going to be very interesting to see if the ping pong balls do fall their way on May 15th in Chicago, if they decide to go with Luka Doncic to save the franchise or DeAndre Ayton to go alongside Devin Booker and Josh Jackson moving forward for the next decade plus in the Valley. But I appreciate you guys listening to today's episode of Locked On Suns. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow to recap the Clippers game.